Now, to begin, I would like to think, and I'd like to say that everything that we go over this afternoon is going to be all from the mind of yours truly, but I did have a little bit of extra time to come up with something this afternoon because I actually thought I had it last week, so got a little ahead of myself. So I did have some time to look over a few studies and a few outlines to kind of better prepare myself, so I do want to give whoever came up with those their due credit. But to begin, we kind of want to discuss leprosy itself, try to get maybe a better understanding as to what exactly was going on during these few verses. Leprosy in biblical times was obviously a terrible thing. A lot of scholars aren't completely exactly sure what biblical leprosy was, or if it was any different than maybe the leprosy that we're familiar with today. While it may have described what is known today as Hansen's disease, or Hansen's disease, depending on how you want to pronounce that, the word probably included other skin diseases as well. Whatever it was, once a person caught it, it was considered pretty much incurable, and those diagnosed with leprosy were pretty much banned from society. In Leviticus chapter 13, verses 45 through 46, the Bible tells us, says the person with such an infectious disease must wear torn clothes, let his hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of his face, and cry out, unclean, unclean. So as long as he has the infection, he remains unclean. He must live alone, he must live outside the camp. So while the early Israelites didn't operate on the germ theory of disease, they understood something about infectious diseases. And those suspected of leprosy were kept isolated until their diagnosis was confirmed. We can actually read this in Leviticus chapter 13 and verse 5. But the loathing directed at lepers was not merely just fear of the disease or fear of the sickness. Leprosy made a person ritually unclean as well. To touch a leper defiled a Jew almost as much as touching a dead person. In a sense, leprosy was a sign of God's disfavor. Later, Jewish practice prescribed that while lepers might attend synagogues, they must be the first to enter and last to leave, and must stay in a special compartment to isolate them from the other worshipers. And some say there is no less than a distance of 4 cubits, or 6 feet. And must be kept from a leper. To the rabbis, the cure of a leper was as difficult as raising a person from the dead. In biblical history, only 2 people had been cured of leprosy. Miriam, who had leprosy for 7 days as a punishment for speaking against Moses' leadership. We can find this in Numbers chapter 12, verses 9 through 15. Also, in 2 Kings chapter 5, we hear of Naaman, a general of the army of Aram, a heathen from Damascus. When he obeyed Elijah's instruction to wash 7 times in the Jordan River, he was healed. Healing a leper had not been done in Israel for 700 years and was thought to be an earmark of the messianic age. We can find this in Luke chapter 7, verse 22. When leprosy would no longer afflict people. So moving along, come to verse 12 where we talk about the 10 men with leprosy. The Bible says, as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. There are 2 things that we need to notice. First, Jesus is just outside the village. And 2, he meets a group of lepers. We need to try and think about what's going on during this time and what we kind of know now about leprosy during this time. It wasn't uncommon for lepers to group together. They can't have much social contact with the clean members of society. So it'd be smart to conclude that they formed kind of their own society of the unclean, or I guess for lack of a better term, the untouchables. Being just outside a village would be common, since they probably obtained food from family members or those in the village who may have pity on them. Since they have no land to till, no livestock to look after, they are completely dependent upon others. Moving on along, Jesus says, they say, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. As a matter of fact, to quote, it says, they stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. So when Jesus and his group of disciples draw near, the lepers immediately recognize him and call out his name. The form of address, Master, is translated as a term used in secular Greek for various officials, teachers, leaders, and so on. In the New Testament, sometimes the word is used by Luke where the parallel would be for teacher or rabbi. The word is usually spoken by Jesus' disciples, except in this passage. It says that the lepers ask for pity, which would be a familiar cry that they had been uttering ever since they were diagnosed with leprosy and cast out of the village. The words fall easily from their lips. I'm sure as each time they say it, it becomes more and more common and a lot easier to say, as many times as they probably had to say it. They're probably used to having to voice it. The phrase, have pity, which translates to be greatly concerned about someone in need, or to have compassion, to have mercy, to have pity for someone. They don't ask for healing, but just for pity, for whatever Jesus might be able to give them. Food, clothing, maybe even shelter for a short time, whatever he decides to offer. They know Jesus' reputation for compassion. But do they really ask for and expect healing? The text, at least, doesn't necessarily indicate that or confirm that. So moving along to verse 14, the Bible reads, when he saw them, he said, go, show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. The word show, which can be translated to cause to be seen, to show, to point out, something or to bring attention to something or someone. The significance of the priests and Jesus' instruction is what's interesting, or what kind of paints us a whole picture. Before, I've read this passage many times. I'm sure we all have. But it's when you, and one of the things that I really enjoy about these studies is that a lot of times it causes people to dig deeper in certain things that they may skim over or overlook. As you can get a lot more meaning out of this, as I said before, it kind of tends to finish off the edges and paint an overall picture for you. The interesting thing about him saying, or the significance of him saying to show yourself to the priests, is that only priests, according to Jewish law, can declare a person healed of leprosy, clean and fit to reenter society. We know this by reading through Leviticus chapter 14. Jesus doesn't say that they are healed, but by saying, show yourselves to the priests, he certainly implies it. Therefore, they must go to receive a clean bill of health from the official who can grant it. The priests live together in villages, and there is a priest village nearby in most areas of Palestine. Verse 14 is the key to understanding what happened exactly. It says, and as they went, they were cleansed. So there had to have come a point, as they began to obey Jesus, that their healing took place, either all of a sudden or gradually as they went along their way. What we need to focus and what we need to kind of realize on, maybe glean from, is that if they had disbelieved Jesus, maybe even laughed at his command, and thought it to be completely illogical, they wouldn't have been healed. But they believed him. Or that is, they have faith. And received their healing as a result. How can we use this in today's time? Or how can we use this to maybe learn from in our Christian walk? Even though we may talk to people, we may talk to somebody who believes. Belief doesn't exist in a vacuum. Faith is exhibited in what we actually do. Because these lepers believe, they begin to obey and go to the village where the priests live. As Jesus' brother James says in James chapter 2, verse 17, in the same way, faith is by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. Moving along to verse 15. You learn about the thankful Samaritan. We're not really told how they discover that they were indeed healed, but it probably doesn't take long. Looking at one of his friends or one of his comrades, a leper probably says something like, "Where's your leprosy? Where are the spots? Where are the afflictions of your skin? Your face is clear. The skin on your hands is soft and even." Then all of them probably begin to examine themselves, and sure enough, as they start to look, they realize they're healed. Imagine you have leprosy. Imagine you live during this time. Imagine you've had the illness for months, years even, to the point that you're kind of used to it. And imagine you're told to just walk towards the priest. And as you're walking, all of a sudden these afflictions that you've known for years, the pain, you start to notice your friends that you've probably hung around and gotten to know, and you start to realize that their complexions are starting to clear up. You're not noticing the pain. The sores on your arms are going away. I mean, can you imagine the feeling you'd have? The joy, the celebration that probably broke out in the group as they continued on toward the priest's village. And I bet you his command to go see the priest made 100% sense now. But the Bible reads, one of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. In verse 15 and 16, it says, he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And it goes on to say, and he was a Samaritan. So all 10 lepers realize that they're healed. But only one comes all the way back to Jesus, praising God for his mercy and healing him. The word translated praising basically translates to praise, to honor, to extol, and if God does the glorifying, to cause to have splendid greatness, clothed in splendor, or glorify. In verse 18, the phrase is given is give glory, or honor as enhancement of or recognition of status or performance, or fame, recognition, renown, honor, even prestige. What we need to notice is in verse 15, it says, a loud voice. The lepers have called out loudly to ask for mercy. I imagine, I don't know if y'all have ever been in a situation where you feel humble or nervous, or you're in a place where you don't know anybody, or you have to ask for something extremely in a humbled manner. A lot of times you don't speak up. As a matter of fact, a lot of times we tend to mumble. But it says that with a loud voice. The lepers called out loudly to ask for mercy, but only this leper offers loud thanksgiving and praise. Wouldn't it be something if every time we were thankful we did it loudly as this? If our thanksgiving was just as loud as our requests that we ask. We need to notice the thankful leper's response. He throws himself at Jesus' feet as a sign of utter humility. He touches Jesus, probably. And Jesus doesn't recoil from him as if he had cooties or an infectious disease. It says Jesus receives his thankful or his thanks graciously. So the leper, one, gives glory to God, and two, thanks Jesus. The thankful leper, being a Samaritan, may not know that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, but certainly he credits Jesus as being God's instrument for his healing. So moving on to the unthankful nine. Jesus asks, were not all ten cleansed? Where are the other nine? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? So the surprise in this healing is that the only thankful one was a non-Jew. The mixed group of lepers is presumably made up of both Jews and Samaritans, their common disease uniting them despite their deep divisions of ancestry, religion, and history. But the only one courteous enough to offer thanks was a Samaritan. So this observation in and of itself kind of concurs with several other indictments of the Jews living in Jesus' day. Jesus points out in the parable of the tenants in chapter 20, verse 9 through 19, that by and large, God's people have rejected his appointed son. In John chapter 1, verses 11 through 12, John's gospel begins with the sad observation, he came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. So moving along in chapter 17, the account concludes with Jesus' departing blessing. In verse 19, he says, then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. The phrase made you well, or made thee whole, depending on which version you read from. The word commonly translated to save is to deliver. And the noun form is used widely of salvation. In this context would mean to preserve or rescue from natural dangers and afflictions, to save, or to keep from harm, to preserve, to rescue, specifically safe or free from disease. So this passage hints at the fact that Jesus offers this leper more than others. They received healing, but this Samaritan receives a deeper salvation in addition. His faith has prompted him to return to the feet of Jesus in thanks. And that personal contact, that personal submission, signifies a soul healing that is more than just skin deep. So taking this all in, what are some of the lessons we can learn? What are we disciples supposed to learn from all of this? Well, perhaps most obvious is that outsiders are sometimes more responsive to God's own people. Or than God's own people. Sad to say, but being a certified believer can sometimes result in spiritual deafness. Because we're just human, many times when we're exposed to something for so long, we can be desensitized from it. Consider some of the longtime members of people we may know. Maybe when we were growing up, we knew of members that were faithful for such a long time. Are they necessarily the most spiritually mature or spiritually deep? It would be wrong for us to just assume that Christians are the only ones who have spiritual acuity. We all have friends that maybe aren't members of the Church of Christ, but all in all, we would say that they're good people. they believe in a higher power. They believe in, maybe even believe in God. But they're not really members of the Church of Christ. They may not have taken the proper steps. May not have been baptized for the remission of sins. But you would say that they're religious. Jesus is in the business of saving sinners. He doesn't discriminate on the basis of their religion or lack of it. As long as we understand, or as long as they understand, once they've determined what needs to be done, that they do it. All sorts of people are aware of their need for God, especially during times like this. We've got a lot of things going on in the world today. I think it's been an awakening for a lot of people that have probably just been living their lives from day to day, just, you know, going A to B. I think now a lot of them are asking questions. Maybe not necessarily out loud, but maybe at the end of the day when everything's nice and quiet. Now's a good time for us to try and answer some of those questions maybe for them. Maybe answer some questions that we have ourselves. It can possibly happen, and we need to be aware of it. We also need to focus on our faith as well. One thing we also need to learn from this is that our gratitude is expected. A clear lesson is that Jesus expects us to show our gratitude. In the encounter of the thankful leper, Jesus is clearly mentions the unthankfulness of the 9 lepers who didn't return. We've got to train ourselves to show thanks, to give thanks, to be filled with thanksgiving. Without being thankful disciples, we won't be pleasing to Jesus. Finally, gratitude is an important component in our salvation as well. Were all 10 lepers healed? Yes. Were they all saved? Yes, in a sense that they were rescued from their disease, but not in the sense of drawing close to God in thankfulness and dependence. The 9 were saved physically, but not spiritually. The Bible said, where are the other 9? Or Jesus asked, where are the other 9? Healing that doesn't bring a person to Jesus is incomplete, and it's stunning. Once again, we'll read verse 15 through 17. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Do we know somebody maybe that could be one of the 9 this afternoon? We need to ask ourselves, are we one of the 9? Have you ever prayed for help or blessings and been granted your prayer? Have you been blessed but haven't let God know you're thankful? If you have, go back. Let's be that one of those 10. Go back and praise God with a loud voice. Go back and throw yourself at Jesus' feet and to God in prayer. Let us be like the thankful leper. You know, I think there was a song that came out a few years back. And I don't know anything about the song, and I normally don't repeat things if I don't know a lot about it. But I just remember one part said something about unanswered prayers. And so people talk about they would pray and their prayer was never answered. I've kind of come to the conclusion that there's not a single prayer that is left unanswered. It's just sometimes we have to realize the answer is no. Or sometimes the answer is not now. Whatever the case is, we need to remain thankful that God is watching over us. And maybe we don't get what we want, but chances are that's because God has a different plan for us. So we need to try and remain thankful, regardless of what the outcome is. At this time, we do want to offer an invitation to any of those who are subject to the gospel call, or to anybody who wishes to receive the prayers of the church, whatever the case may be. We would ask that you would come as we stand and sing the song of invitation.